Welcome to Get Over It, the Intuitive Transformation Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. We've got our favorite couple back. We have Barry and Joyce Thistle with us, and they're going to be talking about their new book, the real title is To Really Love a Man and To Really Love a Woman, but I take it as a how-to book because they have some very good tips. So if you're looking for that new relationship and you want to bring it in with clarity and love and grace, this is a book for you. If you're working on your existing relationship, because relationships are always a little bit of work, this is also a book for you because they give valuable tips that we're going to delve into in a little bit. Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you break through the blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you release your BS that is holding you back. But the real question is, are you truly, really ready to? And by the way, folks, BS is belief system. Now, a bit about me for my new listeners. Intuitive since birth. I'm a third generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience helping people break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing information which enables you to become a master builder of your life. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I'm the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I authored Getting Your M&Ms, The Men and Money Book, and Masterful Choices, The Key to Easy, Effective Change. I provide consultations and healings regarding relationships, business, career, money, and love that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your life to the absolute fullest. Now, my clients tell me that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. To find out more about me and the services I offer, go to my website, MoniqueChapman.com, and I invite you to like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. You can also sign up for my opt-in newsletter, Intuitive Living, from my website, and again, that's MoniqueChapman.com. Now, my guests this evening, they are two people who are deeply in love for 53 years and who have raised 3 children and walk their talk. Their model of relationship and deeply heart-oriented approach have made a unique impact upon thousands of people's lives. They are the author of 6 books, and we're going to talk about their latest books. And there's 2 of them, To Really Love a Man, To Really Love a Woman. Now, Marianne Williamson says that, she says, bravo to the vessels for helping us find the connection between spirituality and relationships. And Ram Dass says, Joyce and Barry, as a couple, they live the yoga of love and devotion. I mean, how deep is that, folks? Okay. Now, you can find out more about them by visiting their website, and that is sacredheart.org.
Shared heart.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Because it's interesting because I put Sacred Heart in the search engine when I went to bring you guys up today. So it's interesting. So sharedheart.org. Sacred Heart was a little bit different, but sharedheart.org is their website. And you're going to find some fabulous stuff there that we'll talk about in a moment. So welcome, guys.
Okay, hi.
Hi.
Hi, it's great to have you here and back with us. I think the last time Barry was on, Joyce, I'm not too sure if you were with us or not. I can't remember back that far. It was 2011.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember either.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to just add something to your introduction, because you listed 2 different kinds of people that would like the books. One is if you have a new relationship, mm-hmm. and the other is if you're working on an existing relationship. Mm-hmm. But there's also, we're finding a lot of people are reading it to find out what went wrong. People that are recently divorced, and they want to find out what they did and what they could do better. So it's kind of a full range of people. I just thought I would add that.
Okay, that's fine. You know, it's interesting. You guys are in a loving relationship. You write about relationships. Everything is just so wonderfully well. When did you decide to come together and share about relationships and people building relationships together? Either one of you. Don't be afraid.
We're excited.
Okay, I think Joyce gave me the look, so that means
okay.
I'm going to speak.
Uh-oh, he got the look, folks. Okay.
Yeah, but it was a loving look. It was a great look. I like getting the look from Joyce.
Okay.
Okay. But anyway, I mean, the main thing, we both have medical backgrounds. You know, I went to medical school and became a psychiatrist, and Joyce became a nurse and then a nurse therapist. But what we realized is relationship is so important, and it was for us, and it wasn't easy. You know, sometimes it's very difficult. And so we've learned so much, and we realized our relationship is like our lab of life. Mm-hmm. And so it was because of just the work we did with each other as a couple that motivated us so deeply to go on and help other couples and singles too.
Mm-hmm. So, but you guys, you know, in any relationship, there's ups and downs and all around. You know, I've been in a relationship for 43 years. And, you know, sometimes I look at them and it's like, oh, goodness, I love you so much. I don't know what I'd do without you. And other times it's like, well, what was I thinking? And, of course, you break through that because everything goes in cycles. So how did you guys initially get through the what was I thinking part? Or did you have that? You might not have had that.
We had a lot of challenges, right? Because we met when we were 18, and this was 1964. Mm-hmm. And what we didn't realize is we are both from New York State, and Barry grew up in a very traditional Jewish family and was raised that he was to marry a Jewish person and raise Jewish children. And this is, you know, shortly after the Holocaust, and people are finding out all the horrors, and there's a real emphasis for Jewish people to really carry on the race. Well, I'm not Jewish, and I had no intention of ever becoming Jewish. Uh-huh. And so right away, in the first couple of months, we had this huge, huge challenge. And so it's not like we went years and years and then an issue popped up. An issue popped up almost immediately. Uh-huh. And so do you want to add a little bit more? So that was our greatest.
Well, you know, you've got a really huge challenge with that, especially if you didn't want to convert. How did the family dynamics affect your choice, and how did you move through that? Because I know I'm Jewish, and, you know, a lot of Jewish people, they want, you know, to keep that intact, and there's sometimes a lot of pushback about bringing someone into the relationship, into the family, who doesn't want to convert. So how did that work out with your families and acceptance?
Well,
I'll say something in a moment.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, because it wasn't just Barry's family, it was my family as well. Mm-hmm. And it was also all of our friends, because nobody had ever heard of a relationship like this working out. It was such an unusual thing. People, I was raised Protestant, and sometimes people in my family, my cousins, would marry a Catholic, and that was kind of raised some eyebrows, but still, it was kind of okay. But to marry someone who's Jewish, that wasn't okay. And basically, nobody believed that this relationship could work.
Mm-hmm.
So those are big, that's a big thing to start out with. And so I think from a very, very young and early age, we had to work on compromise and opening and letting go. And so I don't know if we're quite answering your question, but
let me add something. My mother When I announced that we're going to get married, my mother set up an appointment with my childhood rabbi. Okay, mm-hmm. And we walked into an ambush. Joyce and I, we sat down, and he started yelling and berating us for me, for shirking my responsibility as a Jew, mm-hmm. and he said some things that were really cruel. He said to Joyce, "You'll never be welcome in a synagogue," which is not true, okay? But anyway, the point is, we left that meeting, and we were just holding each other, crying, and it was such an intense abuse that it brought us closer together. Mm-hmm. And what it did, it's like every major challenge can offer a tremendous opportunity for growth. And that's what it did for us. We actually launched a search to find something true in both religions that we could both, and it's about God, it's about spirituality, it's not about religion. And mm-hmm. that was the important thing we learned. We learned to join together in our commonness, rather than focus on our difference.
Okay.
This is for all couples.
Mm-hmm. And as you focused on the commonness, that allowed you to become closer and a stronger bond as a couple moving forward?
Yes, yes. And finally, we got married when we were 22, mm-hmm. and finally this minister in Buffalo, New York, he agreed to help us, and he said, "I want you to agree that you will try to not change each other, because it's the differences that you each have that are going to be your strength."
Uh-huh.
And that also was such a valuable lesson, because people come to us in counseling and they're ready to just give up because they have this difference, and we tell them about us, that a difference can actually be one of your greatest strengths, because you work on it as a couple, and you bring in compromise and growth, and you just keep going until it's actually a very, very beautiful part of who the couple is, the difference.
But only if you try to understand each other. Mm-hmm. And listen to each other. That's the only way it's going to work.
Well, based on everything that you said, it's truly about being open in all ways and being open to the vulnerabilities of relationships and just embracing it. It's interesting because when I introduced you, I said your website was Sacred Heart, but you guys have really, and it's Shared Heart, but you guys have really brought the sacredness in, not necessarily religious sacredness, but the sacredness of love into relationship to share with other people, and I really want to congratulate you for doing that. Folks, we're speaking with Barry and Joyce Vissel. They co-authored To Really Love a Man, To Really Love a Woman, two books, a lot of wonderful advice that you can embrace and move forward with, and you can check them out at their website, and that is sharedheart.org. Again, sharedheart.org. Barry, let's start with you. Why is it so important, and we touched on this a little bit, but what is the most important way for a man to love a woman?
You know what I would say, and we were talking about spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
I would say for the greatest way I love Joyce is to see the divine goddess in her. You know, to look into her eyes and actually see what is more than just her person, more than her personality and her ego, but her divinity. And
mm-hmm.
and that's actually my favorite way to love her. And then to let her know, to put it in words also, to say it, you know, because Joyce is a divine goddess. After 53 years together, she's more beautiful than ever before.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's so sweet. and Joyce, the same question reversed back to you. What is it that...
Well,
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, definitely, I would answer in the same way that Barry's just answered, and but you know, I can't always see that divineness because sometimes I'm, you know, busy, or you know, when we were raising kids, I wasn't always in that kind of a state. But uh-huh. what I could do is to appreciate him, to just notice what he's doing, and appreciate, to give words, and that and to thank him, and that has helped. That's helped a lot. So it's honoring the God in him, and when I'm not in a space where I can, you know, see that, because I can't mm-hmm. always, to appreciate him as a human being, and all that he is. And he's a really fun grandpa, and I and like really 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 fun, and mm-hmm. and so I love to appreciate that about him.
Mm-hmm.
Let me. Can I be also practical? I know my first answer was very up in the air. I want to be also down to earth.
Okay.
A way that I really love, Joyce, is being vulnerable. You know, because that's hard for especially men. It's hard for women too. But
mm-hmm.
when I share with Joyce, like my insecurity or my fear or something that's making me sad, it allows, it's like by doing that, I open the door for her to have more access to me. And that's a way to love, for me to love her. Because otherwise, you know, I grew up in a tough neighborhood in New York, and I, you know, vulnerability was not ever taught. You know, if I showed fear, I'd get beaten up in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
But in a relationship, in a deep, intimate relationship, that is the requirement for intimacy, to be mm-hmm. vulnerable, to be able. Go ahead.
Well, let me ask you a question. You said that if you showed vulnerability on the streets of New York, you'd be beaten up. But in some relationships, if you show vulnerability, you're energetically or mentally or even sometimes physically beaten up. How do we get, if we're in a relationship like that, how do we get past it, grow past it, so that you can be vulnerable and the other person can accept the vulnerability as opposed to looking at you as a weak person?
I know, and actually what you're talking about is an abusive relationship,
uh-huh.
whether it's physical or emotional, or whether you're put down for your vulnerability, that's abuse.
Uh-huh.
And there has to be zero tolerance for abuse. If you're truly vulnerable with your partner and you show your fear or sadness and you're made fun of or whatever, not accepted, that's cause for either separation or, before that, working with a counselor, because you have to say no to that. That is not ever a good thing,
okay.
to be put down to your vulnerability.
Okay. So many people are. So if there's anyone, male or female, that's listening to the show this evening and they find themselves in that type of situation, what would be your words of wisdom to them?
Well, number one, seek counseling. But number two, you have to say no. You say no to any abuse. If you're being criticized for something that is an actual, like a delicate flower being stepped on, right?
Uh-huh.
You have to say no. You have to say no. You cannot tolerate any kind of abuse, really, mm-hmm. in a relationship.
Okay. Well, this wasn't abuse in Joyce's book, but she did talk about saying no, and I think it was something along the lines of, you know, saying no in the life, her life changed or either your life changed. I don't remember. I read the book a while ago. So, Joyce, speak to the issue of saying no, just not sexually, you know, I don't want to be bothered tonight, but, you know, if something, or today, if anything else is going on in a relationship where it's truly outside of your comfort zone, something that you truly either need to discuss more or just don't want to have any part of.
Could you rephrase the question?
Okay, yeah, so I want you to talk about, in your book, you have a chapter, I believe, on You Said No and Changed My Life. So I would like for you to address the energy of being able to say no, putting up that boundary, whatever you're saying no to, but putting up that boundary so that you can live and breathe and the other person can respect you and you both move forward in the relationship.
Right. Saying no is like, it's just critically important. And Barry's, I mean, we're both strong people. But in the beginning, I think Barry's strength was more evident in our relationship.
Uh-huh.
And I tended to allow him to do things that I was uncomfortable with, but not completely uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I guess I was hoping that I could be comfortable with it. And then finally, this was when we were 25, he had an affair.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not comfortable, and there was no way that I could ever be comfortable. I didn't want to live my life that way.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying, you know, he told me right away, but he also said, you know, this, I want to live my life this way. I want to be able to be with more than one woman.
Uh-huh.
And I knew every cell in my being knew that this was not the way I wanted to live my life.
Mm-hmm.
And the no that came out was so big. And I remember taking our dog and just leaving. Basically, I was leaving the relationship, leaving something that I could never go along with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's I'm so grateful that I did that, because we've known women that have tried to accommodate. We even knew a woman that when her husband told her this, she invited the woman over to have dinner, and you know, she tried to accommodate, but she never honored her own feelings, which were,
uh-huh,
which is a huge no. And one time in a workshop, we had her express that no, because she never had, this affair had been going on for years, and she, uh-huh, finally expressed it, and it wasn't just a little no, it was huge.
Huge, yeah.
They had little children, too. It was so huge. It was like a mother bear just growling.
Uh-huh.
And he burst into tears. And he said, I never knew that you loved me that much to be able to say no.
Uh-huh.
Isn't it the thing that saying no is actually a very powerful way of saying yes?
Yeah, because you're setting those boundaries of what's acceptable to you and what's not, while not diminishing the other person. You're just, well, this works for me, and this doesn't, you know. Well, Joyce, let me ask you this. You said Barry, you know, way back when had an affair, and you know, you obviously gotten past that because you're still together. When he had that affair, did you feel that it was something within you that you weren't giving him? Did you feel that you weren't really in tune with what his needs were? Or did you just feel that he was a guy who just wanted to be with somebody else for a minute?
the last one. No, I was a very devoted wife. I never went into that. Mm-hmm. And I just saw, like, wow, he is off on a track, and I don't know where it came from, but it's not a track that I can, it's not a path that I can join him in.
Mm-hmm.
That affair, even though he told me right away, which is, mm-hmm, so he was honest,
awesome,
right away.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That took really 2 years for us to really be able to heal.
Mm-hmm.
That level of betrayal is so deep, and oftentimes couples just can't go through it, and it takes an enormous amount of work on both people.
Okay.
And sometimes, like the man in this case, Barry, sometimes, well, no, Barry wasn't like this, but the couples that we see, the man, mm-hmm, if it's the man that had the affair, he'll think, well, you know, it's been a month, you know, get over it. You know, I apologize and just get over it. But it doesn't work that way. The kind of betrayal, and it takes time to rebuild trust again. And the mm-hmm. partner has to be so willing to just be there and hold their partner in their pain. And that's what Barry did to me. Is, you know, it wasn't like it was every day, but mm-hmm. it grew less and less frequently. But when it would come back again, it would be just as strong as if it had just happened. Okay. And I would rather than get angry at him, I just say, you know, it's there again. The pain is there, just so strong. Mm-hmm. And he would hold me and say, I trust myself that this will never happen again. And I'm hoping that someday you will learn to trust me as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't any pressure, but just an honoring of the feelings.
Yeah, an understanding.
An understanding. And we got through it. Not only did we get through it, but it caused such a shakeup in our relationship that we had to put it back together again in a better way,
mm-hmm.
in a stronger, better way, more mature.
Yeah, well, it seems like if you're looking to continue, you have to. But Barry, let me ask you, and, you know, I'm not, you can use yourself or someone else when I ask you this question, but why is it that you had the need to go out and seek someone else in the first place? I know, I've been married, you know, 43 years, and he's had an affair on me, and I'm like, why? The emotional part was there, the physical part was there, the mental part was there. I'm doing all the things that I thought I could do to, you know, have this equal exchange of happiness, and yet, again, he needed to find something else outside of the marriage. So what is it that brings a man to that point where they're seeking something else?
Okay. Well, and it's not just men, of course. It's women, too. But,
oh, no, women, too.
Let me share two things. First, and this is actually one of our specialties. A lot of couples come to us after an affair or a betrayal. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that is really... It's never true when the person who has the affair says, well, I wasn't getting what I was needing from my partner. Mm-hmm. Okay? That's never true. And what takes a lot of courage and responsibility to admit is that the person who had the affair wasn't giving what they were needing to give to their partner. That's a big one to get. It's a hard one to swallow, that one. But I want to be really personal. For uh-huh. me, why I could hold Joyce and reassure her that I would never ever have an affair with anybody else or go outside of the marriage was because I learned a major uh-huh. lesson.
Okay.
And the lesson, you see, up until that point of the affair, I was in denial of having actually a little boy inside of me who needed love.
Mm-hmm.
I had closeted away my inner child.
Mm-hmm.
And after the affair, after Joyce left, see, so having the affair was for me a way to prove to myself that I didn't need Joyce. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So when Joyce left, and
surprise,
when she left, it didn't take me more than just like a few days mm-hmm. to realize that I had just lost her, mm-hmm. and it's like the shell around my heart shattered. Mm-hmm. And what I felt for the first time, this deep, deep need. It's like a child's need for a mother. It's so deep. And I'd been repressing that. And so when I realized that, how much I needed Joyce, it was like a major wake up. And mm-hmm. and that's what allowed us to come back together. And to this day, all these years later, you know, it's still such a precious thing that I have a little boy inside still. At the age of 72, I have mm-hmm. a little boy inside that still needs love, and it's so beautiful to need love. Mm-hmm. It's not a bad thing at all.
Okay, but the type of love that you're talking about for that little boy inside your now 72, is that parental love? Is that relationship type love, sexual love? What type of love is that, that that inner child is still craving on a daily basis?
Yeah, thank you, Monique. That's a beautiful question, because obviously a little child does not crave sexual love.
A we little
child. No, I've never met a child who craves that.
Mm-hmm.
A child craves parental love.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an acceptance. That beautiful comfort.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a child craves, and that's the part that I was not aware of, and now I'm very aware of, and that's a beautiful thing. You know, I used to think needing love was horrible, was a sign of weakness. Now I see that my need for love is actually a sign of my strength.
Interesting. Is that a generational concept? Because I look at the millennials today, and they attack it a little bit differently. They're more open to the types of information that you guys share in your book, and it's not like, you know, when we were coming up that men were afraid to love because love would be perceived as a sign of weakness. So do you feel that's a generational thing, or do you feel that the millennials today, you know, still have the same hang-ups that we had?
Yeah, really, we see young people with the same issues now as older people.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't think it's changed. You know, young people today are just as much shut down to vulnerability as we were when we were kids and younger,
mm-hmm.
young adults. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think a big change that is happening is that when we were, when we started our work,
mm-hmm.
45 years ago, mm-hmm. it would be mostly women that would come.
Mm-hmm.
And if there were men, they would kind of sit on the outside and be really quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And then over the years, the men more men would come. And in the last, I don't know, 20 years or so, the men are really stepping up with their feelings and expressing their feelings and really wanting to be heard. And I think that's just such a beautiful, beautiful change. I mean, we even have workshops now where there's more men than women, which is, that never used to happen in the beginning. And also with the couples, it used to pretty much be that the women would not drag exactly, but it would be entirely the woman's initiative.
Mm-hmm.
And now we get calls from men wanting to come with their wives, and there's a little hesitancy on the woman's part. So that can, yeah, it is. It's nice though.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and,
okay.
You know, and another, can I just say one more thing?
Please.
We're actually noticing a bit of a change with women. You know, and some of this has to do with, you know, the whole women's lib movement, but women are actually becoming sometimes too strong and paying a price of, I don't know to say the word masculine, but it's where this delicate sensitivity and the delicate feelings are being more buried as women are like stepping out more into the workplace and professional lives. And so, you know, so we're actually having sometimes a harder time where years ago we didn't have this problem as much, but getting women to be vulnerable is sometimes harder now.
Interesting. Do you think that the Me Too movement has had an impact on this?
Way before.
Yeah.
I mean, that's wonderful, wonderful. I'm so grateful that's happening. But this, I'd say way before.
Yeah.
You know, I also wanted to just throw something in, that our third and youngest child, our son, is gay. Mm-hmm. And so he's very, because I realize we're talking in, you know, terms of men and women. But
we were going to get to the gay thing, so please, you know, go ahead. That was on my list.
So we've learned a lot, and mm-hmm. I think because our son is gay, and also we've spent a lot of time socially when we were younger with gay couples, mostly women couples, but also more and more men couples are coming to us,
mm-hmm.
and they pretty much have the same issues. It's not like it's different. They pretty much. And so say we have a workshop of 10 couples, maybe two are women couples.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, the things that come up, it's really no different. So they're dealing with the same things in mm-hmm.
I have to add that mm-hmm. the one big difference with gay couples versus hetero couples is the gay couples only have to buy one of our books.
Oh,
to really love a man or to really love a woman.
Really? Huh.
I laugh about it, but it's really not true, because even like two men, you know, they learn a lot from To Really Love a Woman too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was going to say I respectfully disagree, because as I was reading the book, and I also my youngest son is also gay, and as I was reading it, I'm going, okay, well, this would work for my son, but you know, his partner needs to hear this too. And actually, I've given them the copies of the book that you gave to me. I had to go like wrench it out of their hands so I could do this interview. But I feel that the information shared is for any type of relationship, because sometimes even within a LGBTQ relationship, you have two women, but one of the women really thinks that, both women think they have the energy of being a man, but they are still trying to struggle and balance the feminine side, and it's almost as if they both need to, or feel they need to, you know, give up who they are at the soul level to become something that, you know, another person in society would feel that they are. So there's so many dynamics going on within the relationship of a gay relationship. I really think that the information in both books is valuable, you know.
Oh, thank you.
I think you should take a chapter and share with the other person what they read, because it works, you know, in many types of relationships. And, you know, although this book is about, your books are about relationships and human beings and all of that, I do find that some of the examples that you use in the book, it can transfer over to other types of relationships, whether it's a relationship or a friend relationship or anything like that. It's the energy behind it, I felt, that truly works. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
And I want to say that really, when it all gets down to it, we could have titled the books To Really Love, period.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not just about man or woman. It's about loving. It's about, mm-hmm. because loving is a great, great art, and it's worth learning about, and it's worth practicing, and it changes your life.
Tremendously, and it's a good change.
Okay. Yes.
And so, Joyce, how can we trust a man?
Wow, that's a big question.
In 30 seconds, you know, no, just kidding.
how can a woman trust a man?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, first of all, for anyone, a man or a woman, to know that your feelings are really important.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think part of, in for a woman in trusting a man, is that the man will actually listen to a woman's feelings.
Mm-hmm.
and be respectful and understanding, because if your feelings aren't respected, you really can't trust the person.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think that's maybe a short way of answering it.
No, but it makes sense. And I'm going to ask Barry, how can you trust a woman? And then I've got another scenario for you guys afterwards. So, Barry, how can you trust a woman?
Okay. Do you know that we get this a lot. We get couples who come and how, I can't trust her, I can't trust him. And do you know what we do as therapists? And it's the most important thing. It's when you make that statement, I don't trust you, how do you not trust yourself? That's the important one. Because if you don't trust yourself, how can you trust another?
Anybody else, yeah.
I know. So that's what it's about. And it's hard to look at how we don't trust ourselves. We'd rather project it on our partner. So that's a big one. No, and I don't want to diminish the other truth, which is, of course, there's a relationship between two people also. And if one, you have to be trustworthy to be trusted by your partner. But I'm just looking at the deeper thing is, number one, trust yourself. And then you can look at, the ways that you are not trusting your partner.
Okay. And I think just to add to this, so, in every relationship, if it's there will be periods where you're going to see the darkness, the part that's however you want to call it, you're going to see that in your partner, the shadow, and how you learn to trust each other is that whatever comes up, there's a willingness to work through it. And if you show your partner say both people are in an argument and their shadow sides are coming out, and then the one just shuts down and refuses to work through it, you can't really trust a person then, because it's we all have these parts of ourselves, and to really love someone, you have to in a way also embrace and be willing to really work through that all of it, the whole, like the whole gestalt of who the person is.
Okay. So how do you let go of the need to be right? Because, I feel that that's a negative premise, if you will, the need to be right. But sometimes people, they have that need. I have to be right. I've got a neighbor friend who's going to listen to this show, and she's very much interested in another neighbor who's wife had passed away, been friends for like 40 years. The guy is, he's newly single, if you will, it's only been a couple of years. And she wants him, but she wants him on her terms. She doesn't want to acknowledge who he has grown to be at this point in time, and everybody's in their late 60s. She wants him on her terms. So how do you get past wanting someone, but you got to have him on your terms? Like, they can't snore, they can't squeak the chair, they can't, everything is they can't. And my advice was to her was to look elsewhere, but I could have given her the wrong advice. So what are your thoughts?
Okay, here's the short answer.
And they chuckle.
Okay? The short answer is, would you rather be right, or would you rather have love?
Yes.
Okay, but the longer answer, really, that's what it's about. If you, Joyce and I, we still fight. We still argue. We get into our corners and, shut down and are upset with each other. And each of us tries to be right. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we laugh at the process, and sometimes in the middle of the process we don't laugh at it. It's just too painful. But in the end, in anything like this, you have to be able to look, it's basically that, do I want to be right, or do I want to actually have a deeper experience of life, and do I want to grow in this life? Because if I'm just going to be right, I'm going to be static.
Yes.
I'm going to be stagnant. But if I can let go of being right, then there's a whole world that opens up for me.
I'd like to share, because you're such an intuitive person, and that's your work. I had this experience, maybe it was, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago, but I would go into this, that Barry's wrong, that I'm right. Mm-hmm. And we were, you know, we don't argue that much, actually, but when we do, it's so painful, because we're used to being in quite deep harmony. But this is one of those times when we weren't getting along, and Barry, we exchanged some words that weren't very nice, and he walked out of the room, and my thought was, whoa, when is he going to learn that I'm right, basically? And I did something that I sometimes do. We had, in this room, we had a bookshelf with a lot of books, and I ran my hand over the books till I pulled one out, and I opened it up, and I to this day don't know what the book was, but the sentence that just popped out to me, because, and I think it's absolutely the truth, is that, so this is what it said: as long as you fail to see your part, you will not be able to grow spiritually. Isn't that a beautiful thing? That it's when we can see, take responsibility first for something that's not going right, and really be able to own it, that then we can grow spiritually. Because in every argument, there is a way that every person can take responsibility. It might be that you stepped out of love, that you closed your heart. You know, there's different ways, but a discord doesn't happen between two people unless both people are contributing. The story of your friend or your neighbor is that's really interesting, because you really cannot change someone. You really have to embrace a person, and at the same time have boundaries for yourself. So like this with Barry's affair, I set up the boundary, and I assumed Barry would go about his life, and we would get a divorce, because he didn't like that boundary. But he on his own, he wanted to do something about it. And so this woman, she has to somehow open to whatever it is that she can't quite accept, if she wants that relationship to succeed.
Yeah. Well, my take on it is not going to succeed, because she's in her world of what she wants and holding on to past hurts. And he's out there exploring and moving on. And, you know, he had a lady friend, and he was considering moving to be near the lady friend. And, you know, that's fine. It's like, you know, pick up your life and move forward. And then, you know, the neighbor was just like, well, I am so disgusted with him. How could he go and visit her and then come see me and invite me over to watch TV? And I'm like, well, then don't go. You know, I mean, it's real simple in my mind, okay? But, you know, I've been, you know, in relationships so long, maybe I have a skewed look at it, but I'm like, you know, just don't go. Don't do it. But we'll see.
But that's about trusting. Yeah, it's about trusting yourself. You know, it's trusting your own limits. And if it doesn't feel good, You have to listen. You know, people are always second guessing themselves. You know, they feel something, but then their head says, oh no, it's this other way. And so the fine art of relationship is listening to your feelings and not ever betraying them. Listening.
I think that's the most important thing that we said all evening, is listening to your feelings. Now, you guys have a Shared Heart Summer Retreat coming up in Breitenbach, Hot Springs, Oregon. It's coming up pretty quickly. So why don't you tell us about that and invite folks to come join you.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it starts actually Sunday. So it may be a little bit too short a notice for most people. But
not necessarily.
We do it every year at Brighton Bush Hot Springs in Oregon for 5 days. Singles, couples, families, just living in love for 5 days. And then we have in October a retreat that we do for singles or couples in Assisi, Italy, which is one of our favorite places. It's a very powerful, energetic place. And then we have couples retreats right here in Santa Cruz. So sharedheart.org, and you'll see our schedule. And then our books, To Really Love a Man, To Really Love a Woman, they're available. You just Amazon or wherever you want to get them.
If you don't have it, when you walk into your favorite bookstore, folks, ask them to order it. They can. They will.
Exactly. we're so happy. We have so many couples who are reading the books out loud to each other. That was kind of our vision when we wrote them.
Yeah, well, I think that's perfect because, as I said, you know, it'd be great for one person to read a chapter to someone else and take in one book and then vice versa, and then sit down and just either discuss or, even better, just read it and let the energy sit for a minute, you know. Let the energy come to you and put it on like a coat or a comfy sweater and see how it feels. And sometimes it's going to be wonderful and make you feel nice and warm and blissful, and other times it's going to be, ooh, I don't want to wear this. And then you can take a look at it, you know, without judgment. Without judgment.
Right.
They're chuckling.
The opportunity in life is to grow. Whether it's in relationship or not, it's to grow.
Yes, it is. Well, you know, I've really enjoyed you guys, and our time is up. But what pearls of wisdom would you like to leave with the audience? And I would like for both of you to leave a little pearl. So who wants to start first?
Well, I'll start.
Okay,
so the little pearl, it's just what comes to me right now, is to make your relationship the priority in your life. A lot of people have a relationship, but their priority is really their work and their career, or maybe raising their children. And the career, your work, might take a lot more time, probably will, but it's where your heart is. Is your heart with your work, or is your heart really with your partner? And it's the same with raising children. I mean, having three children, I know it's so easy because they're so cute. They're so adorable, especially when they're young. It's just to put all your energy into the kids and kind of ignore your partner. But that's not why the children came. The children came because of the love of the parents. And if the children are allowed to see, you know, just the love and like just sweet, you know, simple affection, and they feel more secure than if all the energy is going to them, and the one, you know, so maybe the father is feeling jealous. Well, the kids are going to feel that. So making the relationship your priority in life, making love your priority.
That's beautiful, Joyce. And my pearl is simply that the greatest relationship is not ever outside of yourself. It's your relationship with yourself, with your soul, with your spirit. That's number one. And if that's number one, if you're getting to know yourself and getting to love yourself, that's going to translate outward into a more successful relationship with another person.
Hey, very well said from both of you. Thank you very much. And I want to thank you for being with us tonight, and you and the audience, as we collectively get over it and open up to love. I am truly honored, and the divine in me honors the divine in you. And folks out there, if you're looking for a better life, love life, you can call Joyce and Barry, or otherwise you can contact me, and you know, get yourself together, make a little investment in yourself. So yes, it does cost money, but make an investment in yourself so that you can move forward for a more productive life. And the number to call me is 888-240-6057. And remember that the most important choice is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of love. Abundant blessings, light, and love to all. Namaste.